Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Private Officer Beat Radio. I'm your host, Rick McCann, broadcasting live today from Studio A of our Charlotte, North Carolina corporate office. A lot happening, so sit back, strap in, and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of From the Legal Side, a production of Private Officer International, where we talk about the legal issues of the day, topics of liability for both the uniform officer as well as plainclothes, retail security, school security, and private law enforcement. And this week, like all others, we're talking about a very sensitive and a very serious topic. We're talking about responding to mental health incidents, what your legal obligations are, what the liability aspect is, and so much more here on the legal side. This past week, a very unique situation occurred. A very unique pairing of university security, not law enforcement, and mental health professionals occurred at the Johns Hopkins University, where they put together non-sworn security, campus security personnel, with a crisis worker to respond to those situations, those calls for assistance that demand that a crisis worker, a counselor, respond instead of armed law enforcement. Now, this is not a unique topic as it goes. I mean, we've heard about it. We've seen it. It's all over the news. It's in the headlines everywhere. It's in discussions from the East Coast to the West Coast. Everyone is talking about the same thing. No time in history has there been a louder cry for mental health professionals in the field than today. But what's unique here is that we have been seeing a lot of law enforcement agencies turning over some calls for assistance to mental health workers, crisis intervention personnel, mental health professionals, and in some areas teaming up and responding on these calls with law enforcement. But this past week set of precedents, it's something not done before. It's something unique. In 18 years of having the association, we certainly have never seen private security personnel of any type pair up and partner with mental health or crisis intervention personnel. Some of our security staff in certain positions have been trained as crisis intervention technicians, crisis intervention personnel. They've gone through police training called CIT, the crisis intervention techniques. Others have been trained in mental health awareness. But this is the first time that I am aware of any place in the nation that any private security agency, company, or department, whether contract or proprietary, has actually put together a program where they have partnered mental health professionals with private security. This is certainly unique, but it's definitely not going to be the last time that we hear of it. As we all know, there are more private security use today than ever before. Almost double the number of private security compared to law enforcement. So yes, we are going to see more calls for security personnel to either have equivalent training, at least some type of CIT, crisis intervention techniques, some type of social service skills, mental health training. And there are many layman courses out there, training and certifications for any individual, especially those of us working on the front line in security and or law enforcement. Well, that brings us to another series of questions and topics, including as just a non-sworn security officer, what is our role? What is our responsibility? And what is our liability? As business owners, we have to be sure, A, that, you know, if we're going to be out there working with the public, as I've said time and time again, this isn't 1960s or early 70s when most of the contract security worked access control at some large manufacturer, foundry, or business as, you know, access control at the desk and you sign people in and out. Most private security contract and proprietary today work with people. More and more frontline security personnel, private law enforcement, are being called in to solve problems, to investigate incidents, and to respond to crisis and medical emergencies. And so as business owners and as frontline practitioners of security and safety, we need to understand what our liability, what our risks are, what our responsibilities are going to be. And I've already heard in the last 2 years, as this topic becomes larger than life and is sweeping not only our nation, but the world, we have our own news staff. We keep up on the news every day. So the headlines coming out of the UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and even places further away all look eerily similar to the headlines here in the U.S., when it comes to mental health crisis, when it comes to intervention and defusing, de-escalation, and not sending armed police to those type of situations. So, I've heard people already in the security industry say, oh, no, that's not our job. We don't even do first aid or CPR. We call 911, and we just stand there and wait. We don't want to get sued. We're not EMTs, paramedics. We're not going to certify our staff in basic life support. Nah, that's not our job. We're security. But it is your job. It is your job. And it is expected. And as private security continues to get more and more involved hands-on with law enforcement type duties, fire and EMS type duties, working in more situations where there's large amounts of people, you'll need to learn not only people skill and de-escalation and communication skills, but civil unrest techniques and how to control large, disobedient, violent, disorderly crowds. Some of it is already being done by security on the front line, especially in retail environments, shopping malls, community colleges, state colleges, and universities. But when we're talking about mental health, let me start first with the business owner, the manager of the company. We can no longer go with just a generic contract. We can no longer use a template. Every contract is not going to be the same. And I have long argued that contract security companies, like other contracted businesses, tailor make their contracts to fit the duties, the job scope, the business type of their client. It wasn't that long ago I would see security companies using about a three-paragraph, one-page contract, simple contract, they called it. We're going to put someone there from 8 p.m. until 8 in the morning. We're going to charge $24.95 an hour. We're going to get time and a half on six holidays. Okay, sign here. That's good enough. Nothing about the scope of duties. Nothing about the training requirements of the staff. Nothing about the limitations of the security officer or the authority. Nothing about what to do in XYZ situations. No. Three or four paragraphs. This is what we're going to supply. This is what you're going to pay. That's it. Sign here on the dotted line. But in this day and age, you can't do that anymore. You have to spell it out. We're going to have two unarmed security officers and the hours, et cetera, et cetera. But we need to be specific in their duties. And if your duties in a shopping mall, an apartment complex, a condo, a gated community, a community college, whatever, is going to be to respond to medical emergencies, to respond to all calls for service, and we're going to talk about that topic in a minute, but we need to spell out. Security personnel will respond to all calls for service, but if it's a mental health crisis, if it's a medical emergency, then their role will be to call 911 and to keep the people as safe as possible, but not to intervene. That needs to be plain language in the contract. We can't assume that's our duties and the client knows it. We can't assume the client wants XYZ. Oh, yeah, I'm sure he would want us to do this and this. I'm sure that she, the manager, who's not the owner, would want us to do da-da-da-da. Don't assume. You know what happens when people assume? They get sued, and they lose. It costs people's lives when we assume we should do this or that. Make sure that you know, as a business owner, what the client wants you to do for disruptive crowds, medical emergencies, and what appears to be mental health crisis. Now, as a paramedic, EMT, firefighter, law enforcement officer, all my life, I can tell you two things about this mental health topic. Number one, it's not always easily identifiable. Number two, it's oftentimes not the direct root cause of the situation. Yes, the person has mental health, but that didn't cause them to go off the rail and start shooting a bunch of people. This has become an excuse. This has become a fallback reason. Oh, so-and-so, police killed him. He had a gun, but he has mental health. That's an excuse. It's not the reason why the man or the woman shot people. It's not the reason why they attacked police. Have you ever visited a psychiatrist or a mental health hospital or any facility that has psych patients? Well, I have. Working in EMS and law enforcement, we've brought patients for 72-hour holds in security. A lot of hospitals, especially a level one trauma, level two, they have holding facilities for psych patients. Those who might be psychologically off balance. In most states, the law allows those people to be held 72 hours for observation. I've been around them, and most of them, for the most part, often seem normal, whatever that means these days. They mean like, they mean well, and they look well, and they act like you and I. They're not screaming most of the time. They're not having a mental breakdown. Sometimes they are. So it's going to be very difficult for you to identify. The more training that you can have, now if you're the business owner, the manager, the supervisor, or the security staff, you need to be top of your game in this field, because what happened at the university when they decided to pair the security staff with crisis workers, they said that one third of all of their calls for service through their campus 911 dispatch were mental health related. That's a lot. Let's say that they had 3,000 students. A third would be 1,000. Let's say they have 30,000. A third would be about 9,000 students. That's just unreal. And yet, it's what security is facing every day and going to face even more. Let's get real, folks. There's a lot of people in crisis across the world, across the globe, here in the U.S. Some of it is brought on by themselves through drugs, excessive alcohol, other crises going on in their life. Many people self-medicate. It looks like they're having a mental health issue, an emergency, a breakdown, but really, it all stems from illegal drug use. How do you know if it's a mental health issue or drug abuse? You don't. You have to assess the symptoms. You have to assess their situation and how they're acting, and they're acting out, and treat what what you can tell is happening. We're going to take a quick break. We've got a lot to talk about. You know, this is not a subject that we can just spend 30 minutes on, but as a security officer, you do, and a security business owner, you do, and you will have that obligation to do something. The same as if someone's having a cardiac arrest and they're on the floor dying. Are you just going to stand there and let them die? Think about it. We'll be right back from this break.
I was just going to the grocery store.
Seatbelt violators, beware.
I forgot to put it on.
If you're pulled over because you've broken the law.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable.
And you're not wearing your seatbelt.
It's broken, but I'm going to have it fixed.
No matter what your excuse is, you will get a ticket in addition to the ticket for your original violation.
Click it or ticket? That's pretty easy to remember.
Some children, America isn't the land of promise. It's a place where every day is a struggle. Because today in America, One in six children lives below the poverty line. For these children, living in poverty means going without medicine, going without food, going without a warm home, or even a roof over your head. And that's life for nearly 13 million children of all races, all across America. Where will you draw the line and get involved? You can help these children and their families find a way out of poverty for good. And you can make a difference in more ways than you think. Will you help? Go to PovertyUSA.org today. Because one in six children in poverty is one too many. A message from the Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
And welcome back to From the Legal Side. Today, we're talking about mental health emergencies, how to respond to them, what our legal obligations and our liabilities are, and how do we prepare for the onslaught of possible interactions with people that may be having a mental health crisis, a breakdown. I hear all the time, and I read on social media, and this is one of the reasons why I try not to go there very often anymore, security officers with very little training and very little legal skills and very little educational background in the law, giving their advice to other security personnel. We don't have any obligation to protect. We don't have any obligation whatsoever to anybody, anything, no matter any time, and da-da-da-yah. Well, yeah, actually, you do. That's why I say over and over again to business owners to be sure the contract is spelled out. Duties, A, B, C, D, E. Training, A, B, C, D, E. Requirements, A, B, C, D. We have to get away from just the hours, just the pay, and get away from those simple 3, 4, 5 paragraph, one page, 1.5 page contract. Have you ever seen your Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T cell phone contract? How many pages? 8, 9, 15, 30, 100? That's for a cell phone. You need to get aggressive with the language of your contracts, business owners. We do have a legal obligation to do something in all situations. As the call volumes continue to go up for law enforcement, they certainly are going up for private security. Ever work in a hospital, a college, a large gated community, a residential community? Hey, I have had contracts where we had 15,000 people on the property. We made up a large portion of the population of the city. 5 swimming pools and 5 clubhouses, an educational facility, a dry cleaner, a gas station, all on the property, a convenience store, and much more. You don't think if you have a contract at an apartment complex with 3, 4, 5, 8,000 people or a gated community? Just had about a month ago, just saw a gated community in Virginia. They have their own internal police department and fire department. Yeah. South Carolina, just over the North Carolina line, there's another community there. They also have their own private force and fire department and EMS. That's what's happening in our world today, in our country. You don't think 3, 4, 5, 8, 10,000 people on your property that you're going to have to respond to a mental health issue, a crisis, someone in crisis? Well, you will. What will you do? What will your training be? What level of training, if any, will you have? We have an obligation if we're responding to a medical emergency, a fight in progress, or a mental health emergency or a crisis. we have an obligation to do at least the bare minimum. What is that? Well, we need to call 911 and adequately tell them what's happening. Oh, the guy's just freaking out. The guy's freaking out. He broke out of a window. Oh, I don't know what's going on. I don't know. They're going to send the police when they really need to be sending police and EMS. We can no longer sit back and assume we're just going to collect a paycheck, business owners, just because we're there. We got a body there on the property. We're going to collect that $28, $30, $35 an hour. That's good enough for us. That's not going to work. It doesn't fly anymore. We got to do more. We got to train better. We got to have better people. We got to pay them more because, as I've said numerous times, security personnel are fast becoming what's called paraprofessionals. And so they may not be law enforcement, but they're going to be an equal very soon. Many states have their own laws that allow private police forces, private police officers. In fact, we have a program that we're offering to show you how to get into that private policing business. 40 states now or more have some statute that allows, we're not talking about security guards, we're talking about private police. We done a radio show about this about a month and a half ago or so, six, 7 weeks ago, and we'll continue talking about it because it continues to be in the forefront of people as they continue having a hard time staffing police positions. Funds are being cut. I just saw yesterday, Kansas City, Missouri, they reduced the police department budget by $44 million. And they diverted it to community services, mental health, and other areas where they think it'll help to reduce the crime, when I don't think so. We know it won't. A lot of cities, a lot of agencies are living in la-la land. And we're going to pay the price real soon with all of the funding, all the reduction of police, and the increase in services. We've had mental health workers already injured and even killed in the last 18 months. When police should have been responding, and they sent unarmed workers. As a security officer, you do have liability. You can be sued, and I know a lot of security officers say, I don't have nothing. Let them sue. They can't get blood out of a turnip. Eventually, if they sue you and get a judgment, it'll be hanging around for quite some time. It'll be on your credit history. It'll reduce your credit score. You don't want that. It's not a good thing. So in closing, I want to tell you three things. Number one, when it comes to any call, any type of situation on the property, we do have an obligation, a legal obligation. And more courts are awarding large, large amounts of money to both individuals and companies because of a lack of response by their security staff that led to injuries or death. We have a legal obligation. We have a moral obligation to do something, even the bare minimum. We have taken on the liability and the risk associated with working in security, law enforcement, fire service, EMS, any type of profession where it's our job to protect people, to respond to their needs, and to provide them with basic service. No matter what you think you should or should not do, you need to know for sure what your legal obligations are. The employer and the security officer needs to have be on the same page and have some rules. This is how we're going to respond to this type of call. This is what you're going to do if we get that type of call. And if you get into this type of situation, back out and wait for police and EMS. Even as an EMS provider, we don't always go in to every call. Sometimes we have to wait for police to arrive and secure the scene. And sometimes you will have to back off and secure the scene. There are several serious crises happening in our industry. The industry is evolving so fast. The job duties and responsibilities are so varied, and we're still putting the same people with the same lack of training or minimal training and just wishing them good luck and taking off. And we can't do that anymore. We have several online courses at Armour College on mental health, on community intervention, on critical thinking, crisis intervention. Check with us at Armour College. Send an email today at helpdesk@armour, A-R-M-O-U-R, college.org if you'd like more information. That's going to do it for this show. Liability and risk are real. Lawsuits are real. The mental health crisis situation is real. And we're going to be dealing with it more and more. Until the next time, stay safe, be blessed, and we'll see you back here on the radio.